podcasts of the WDWNT Network are made possible each and every week by listeners like you and the following fantastic sponsors. Magical Travel is an authorized Disney vacation planner and is always ready to assist you in making your next trip to the Walt Disney World Resort, Disneyland Resort, or aboard the Disney Cruise Line even more magical. If you book a trip to the Walt Disney World Resort between September 29th and December 17th, 2009, you can get a free quick service meal, table service meal, and snack for everyone in your party for every day of your vacation. For more information on this special offer and many, many more, visit MagicalTravel.com and book your next Disney trip today. Resales DVC is your home for Disney Vacation Club resales. Whether you're buying or selling your part in the Disney Vacation Club, Resales DVC is prepared to walk you step-by-step through the process and make sure your experience is as pleasant as possible. For pricing, availability, and more information, be sure to contact Grandma Jackie and Kin at www.resalesdvc.com or by phone at 866-544-2919 to make your vacation dreams come true.
I'm not sponging for rum. It be gold I'm after.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-hey.
There's no turning back now.
Like a grand and miraculous spaceship, our planet has sailed through the universe of time.
Put up 2, 5, and 7.
Launch us now!
Look at the guy in the goofy mask.
That's not a mask.
Sorry, lady.
I'm sure to do better next time. It was my first flight, and I'm still getting used to my programming.
You made it! I knew you would.
Hi, hello, and welcome. Welcome to our show.
Welcome to the WDW News Today podcast, a variety show celebrating the Walt Disney World Resort and its fans. At this time, please welcome your party host, Tom Corliss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the WDWNT podcast. This is episode number 104 for August 3rd, 2009. Kick off this week's show, we have your Walt Disney World Weekend Update. In this week's update, we'll be discussing the official addition of a tequila bar at Epcot, the new vice presidents of Disney's Animal Kingdom theme park and the Downtown Disney District, and the long-awaited addition of a new feature to Disney's Grand Floridian Resort and Spa. Following the update, we have the debut of a new segment called The Golden Age. In this inaugural segment featuring Tomorrowland at the Magic Kingdom, we'll begin our quest land by land, area by area, and space by space throughout the world to find the golden age of the entire Walt Disney World Resort. Finally, to conclude this week's program, we have yet another edition of Town Square Talk, filling you in on everything going on around the WDWNT network of Disney-inspired websites and podcasts. In this week's trip down Main Street WDWNT, we'll have all the details on some segments you can vote for in WDWNT Interactive, some brand new features of our WDWNTunes website, and talk a little bit more about our upcoming 2010 fan event, WDWNT The Weekend. So what are you waiting for? Let's celebrate another week of Walt Disney World information and fun on the WDW News Today podcast.
Thank you.
giving you a week's worth of news and rumors from the vacation kingdom of the world. It's now time for the Walt Disney World Resort Weekend Update with Tom Corliss and the Weekend Update News Team.
Time for this week's Walt Disney World Weekend Update. I'm Tom Corliss, and you're not. Joining me as well for the Weekend Update this week, we have Scott Smith.
I'm Scott Smith, and you're very glad you're not.
But you were just at Disney World, so we would have wished we were you last week. So.
That's very true.
Yes. Justin Heyman.
How's it going?
And Anthony Yaculo.
Wait. I am not Tom Corliss? This
no.
is shocking.
No, you are not.
We've been over this, Anthony.
Darn.
You're Anthony.
And I'm not. Anyway, moving on. Not a ton of news this week, but let's dive in. And we're going to start over at Epcot, where it appears the tequila bar coming to the Mexico Pavilion is close to completion, as it is being advertised as part of the 2009 Epcot International Food and Wine Festival. From the press release that was issued this week in the Mexico section of there, it actually says a new tequila bar adjacent in the pavilion offers a taste of 70 varieties of the popular beverage. This is going to be directly next door to the restaurant right there, the San Angel Inn. And we've, of course, had pictures in the past of this location closed and behind construction walls. And as a matter of fact, on www.newstoday.com, there's a link to that. In the enhanced show, you'll see that picture right now. The bar was originally scheduled to debut sometime in 2010, but they are ahead of schedule, and it appears as early as September of this year, we will have that tequila bar in Mexico. And yeah, a lot more people are going to be drunk around World Showcase.
It's always good to get new stuff open fast, so good on Disney.
Yeah, I think this is good timing to introduce it during Food and Wine. They give Mexico a couple more food and wine-esque offerings, but I think it's been about 9 months maybe since we last talked about the tequila bar time. So
I remember talking about this in very early 2008. I think this goes back much further than that.
Yeah, so. It's been on the show a few times, I think. As I've said before, I like tequila and I like Mexico. So, what could go better together?
I can only imagine that this is going to increase the number of adults that are doing the Kim Possible World Showcase Adventure.
That will be hilarious.
I thought you were going to say Kid Cod as they stumble over the small little chairs.
They're
going to
make the
find
masks.
Themselves having to make masks.
do not go on missions while intoxicated. That's all I will say.
I'll be down there in September, so I hope to actually try the new tequila bar, and I'll have to give you guys a full review.
Absolutely. Just we don't want to find you in the water of the Grand Fiesta Tour attraction.
Don't drink the water.
I found Donald. He's over here.
Watch the boat. Anyway. All right. Since we've covered that, we'll move on over to Disney's Animal Kingdom theme park, where according to Jason Garcia of the Orlando Sentinel, Walt Disney World has named Kevin Lansbury the new vice president in charge of Disney's Animal Kingdom. Lansbury, who has been with Disney since 1986, was previously vice president of Downtown Disney, Transportation, Sports, and Golf for the entire Walt Disney World Resort. He replaces Val Bunting as the top executive at Animal Kingdom. Bunting will become, as previously reported, the general manager of Disney's Port Orleans resorts, both Riverside and French Quarter. Lansbury's successor at Downtown Disney will be Keith Bradford, who has been vice president of operating participants. Bradford has been with Disney since 1995. In addition to taking the helm at Animal Kingdom, Lansbury will continue overseeing transportation at the Walt Disney World Resort. This was an interesting promotion because I know, at least in the fan community, Kevin Lansbury has not been the most popular, I would say, vice president at Walt Disney World. Really coming in at a really weird time for Downtown Disney, a time when Pleasure Island is starting to redefine itself after the closing of all the clubs. We have a lot of new stores and restaurants coming into the West Side and as well the Marketplace. A defining era for Downtown Disney, and right in the middle of it, Kevin Lansbury is being moved into a park that, you know, is in need of an update, a park that has not seen a new attraction in a while. And You know, there needs to be something going on in Animal Kingdom, and it'll be interesting to see if under Lansbury some changes finally start to occur there.
I think this is a hugely, hugely, hugely controversial choice on Disney's part. I've seen all across Twitter and various fan sites people just up in arms over this choice because of, I believe he was pretty central in the closing of the Adventurers Club, and all their fans are pretty peeved over this choice.
Yeah, unfortunately, whether or not it was his decision in the end, we don't really know. But yeah, when you're the head of something and there's a you know, a problematic decision that's made during that time, of course, you're the one that gets blamed for it. So a lot of that blame probably goes to Lansbury. But, you know, it's no secret that Pleasure Island was not making money. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I know a lot of people love the Adventurers Club and a lot of the other clubs that were there. But if they weren't making money, I mean, can you keep things alive? There's no way to do that if it's not making money. And to be honest, all the other changes to Downtown Disney have been quite positive. The addition of Paradiso 37, the characters in Flight Balloon, Virgin Megastore going out, and the temporary Princess Diana exhibit coming in. The addition of Trendy, the Design a Tea Shop, a lot of changes going on. And, you know, other than Pleasure Island, I think for the most part, they've all been positive.
Yeah, I'm hoping he can really bring some good new blood to the to Animal Kingdom.
I think the important thing, is that he's willing to make changes, you know, whether or not you agree with the changes at Pleasure Island. At least he did them and he stuck to them, and that's going to be important for Animal Kingdom over the next couple of years, as we've seen some closures over in the Kemp Minnie Mickey area, and you know, that area especially needs some attention. So any change there could be good, and this guy doesn't seem afraid to make it.
And remember, an interesting rumor has popped up the last few weeks, and those of you who've been following WDW News Today for quite some time, I want to say it's over a year ago, we discussed the rumor of a major e-ticket replacing Camp Minnie Mickey, and actually, there are rumors starting to buzz around again about Journey to the Center of the Earth, so, you know, maybe that rumor finally coming to be, and, you know, if that major e-ticket comes to Animal Kingdom, I think a lot more people are going to like Kevin Lansbury.
I would.
Ditto.
But again, we'll have to sit back and watch. It's been a long time since Animal Kingdom's had a new attraction. And hopefully, under Lansbury's leadership, we'll see some changes at Animal Kingdom. Maybe talk a lot more about it on the news more often. Finally, moving beyond the parks, after a long, long delay, the floor in the lobby of Disney's Grand Floridian Resort and Spa is finally being replaced with new marble flooring that we have been anxiously awaiting, or at least I have. Directly from the Disney Parks Twitter account in the last week, and I quote, "Amazing Italian marble is being installed in the Grand Floridian lobby. Work begins this week. Disney characters will be incorporated into the new marble floor. Characters will include Mickey, Minnie, Goofy, Donald, Pluto, Cinderella, and more." So those are, again, another story that, you know, all three stories this week stretching a long way back through our history here at WDWNT. This is going back to May 2008 when they first put up the temporary carpeting when the floor was supposed to go in the first time. And now here we are many, many months later, 14 months later, finally the new floor going in. And actually, just before we started recording this segment, I saw the first pictures of the second floor receiving its more generic marble, which still looks very nice, but I can't wait to see the lobby. And, you know, Grand Floridian is one of those resorts that, you know, never really had a huge character presence. Of course, you got 1900 Park Fair there, and some of the rooms have the, or had the Alice in Wonderland furnishings, and now going more towards a Mickey and Pals touch there. So I like this direction.
Just glad to see it finally get finished.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I think at some point we said that the marble delivery was delayed, or we had heard that that was a possibility. It was an awful long delay, but
that was supposed to be September of last year originally.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice to see, you know, something get finished that was temporary, you know, like temporary attractions, temporary things that tend to live on for quite a long time. So it's nice to see it finished.
Yeah, so farewell to temporary carpeting at the Grand Floridian. That is going to wrap up this week's Walt Disney World Weekend Update. Good night, and have a pleasant tomorrow.
ancient Rome or Greece? Athens or Sparta? Birthday land or Starland? Let us find out when was the golden age of the Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the very first edition of The Golden Age, a segment or a series of segments where we're going to actually try and figure out mathematically somehow what was truly the golden age of the entire Walt Disney World Resort. In order to do that, we're going to have segments broken down into sections, areas, and pieces of the Walt Disney World Resort over the next coming weeks and months, and you're going to, of course, decide those segments by voting at the WDWNT Network community forums. Joining me for this historic first edition, the one and only The Beard, Jason Diffendahl.
Hey, howdy, hey.
Mr. Anthony Yakula.
Hey, hey.
And Mr. Scott Smith.
Ni hao.
All right, guys, so here's how we're going to do this. To make this a lot easier, every time we pick or our audience picks a particular area, we're going to break it down into eras. And I'm going to read off years, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're picking that year. They're picking that era of the land or whatever we're talking about. And tonight, our particular topic is Tomorrowland. And this one's going to be a little different than most because this is one area that has a tremendous amount of changes over the years and one that has a tremendous amount of different eras that we're going to talk about. So let me read off the changes through the years and the eras that are available for our panel to choose. Of course, we're going to start with the 1972 era, which is going to include the Grand Prix Raceway, Flight to the Moon, If You Had Wings, and the Circle Vision 360 show, America the Beautiful. We then have the 1975 era with Mission to Mars replacing Flight to the Moon, the addition of Star Jets and the Wedway People Mover, and the grand opening in 1975 of Space Mountain and the GE Carousel of Progress. We then have the 1989 era, because there were no changes from 75 till about then, which replaces If You Had Wings with Delta Dreamflight, and also replaces the America the Beautiful show with an updated show called American Journeys in Circle Vision 360. There is then the final Old Tomorrowland era, 1993, where we're going to keep a lot of the older stuff, but add a brand new refurbished Space Mountain, the new Tomorrowland Arcade, known as the Light and Power Company, and the newly refurbished Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress, which, of course, is a tribute to the original 1964 show, bringing back the original song, Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow. Then we have the 1995 era, which is going to make the Grand Prix Raceway the Tomorrowland Indy Speedway. We're going to replace Mission to Mars with Alien Encounter. We're going to have the addition of the Timekeeper in the Circle Vision 360 building. The Star Jets become the Astro Orbiter. The Wedway People Mover becomes the Tomorrowland Transit Authority. And we have the Galaxy Palace Theater coming into play. And yes, it was actually used back then. In the 1999 era, we take everything we had and replace Delta Dreamflight with Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin. Then we have the 2004 era, which brings in, unfortunately, Stitch's Great Escape to replace Alien Encounter. We have Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin adding the photo and small shop at the exit. We have the Timekeeper as a seasonal attraction at the time. And we have the seasonal Galaxy Palace Theater. Our final era simply replaces the Timekeeper with the Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. That's 2007. So we have 1972, 1975, 1989, 1993, 1995, 1999, 2004, and 2007 up for grabs. And again, it is a lot because Tomorrowland, more so than many lands we'll talk about, has a tremendous amount of changes. So let's start going around and let's pick our eras and try and find the golden age of the Tomorrowland area. We'll begin with Jason.
Well, I'm going to go with 1975 era. Which actually runs through a lot of the 80s as well, for a couple of reasons. The People Mover, one of my favorite attractions, had just opened. The If You Had Wings, which is, I think, a classic attraction in many respects, had been open for a couple of years by then. And the next choice, which was 89, by then, if you had wings, was gone.
You're saying you didn't like Delta Dreamflight?
Not as much.
Oh, no.
Well, it didn't have a catchy jingle.
The Delta Dreamflight song was not catchy. We just did an entire episode about Delta Dreamflight.
It wasn't quite as good as If You Had Wings.
Okay.
Blasphemy.
If You Had Wings is that class. That's the classic old-time Buddy Baker era of Disney music. You really just can't beat it. So and you also had Carousel of Progress in there.
It's the funky Carousel of Progress with the other theme song that the Sherman Brothers wrote, which is Best Time of Your Life.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad song. And, this isn't like we can pick and choose the best era of each attraction location or anything, because obviously we could customize to death. And I would certainly pick Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, but Now Is the Time, it really wasn't a horrendous song. It was really pretty catchy, too. It wasn't as classic as Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, but I think it was still a pretty good song for that attraction. So I don't mind that too much at all.
So you've made an interesting point here, and we're going to see this a lot as we do this segment more often, is that you're going to see that a lot of us have to trade off. Because, again, when you pick an era, as Jason said, you can't pick the best era of each attraction, so it all comes down to what's more meaningful to you. What do you think makes the bigger impact?
Right. And you know, I'll tell you, the one of my favorite parts of the Wedway People Mover was the segment that no longer exists, where you would actually go through the show buildings that contained If You Had Wings, If You Could Fly Dream Flight, and there were the huge windows that you would look down into the attraction, and you could see the people riding through the attraction in the Omnimover vehicles from the People Mover. And that was, I thought, really pretty cool. It did what it was sort of advertised, and is sort of still advertised to do, is sort of give you an overview of the Tomorrowland attractions. But the problem is that a lot of those windows that overlooked attractions are now either completely covered with black paint, or they overlook, right now the one overlooks Buzz Lightyear, which is kind of, it's, you can sort of see what that ride's about from that view. But the great thing about overlooking If You Had Wings was that you were looking into a show scene that was actually purposely designed and built so that the view from the People Mover windows was a coherent picture, and you could see the I think it was the Mexico scene.
And Dreamflight, I believe you actually saw into either, I believe it was the Paris, France scene. So yeah, there was a nice view to look into.
Right. So If You Had Wings was designed with those windows in mind, that you could look down into them from the People Mover. And I think that sort of foresight and design and you really can only get that when you get a complete land to be designed at once. You completely lose that when attractions are replaced one by one, as is evident from what you can look down and see now in Buzz Lightyear. It's kind of a random scene from the ride, and there was really no attention paid to the fact that people would be looking down into it from the People Mover. So I think 1975 overall, it was the overall land really showed the intelligent and sort of complete overview of the design of the entirety of Tomorrowland. And along with some attractions that don't exist in later eras, that's what makes me choose 1975.
Now, here's another thing I remember about that era, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe the entrances to, at the very least, Mission to Mars, I can't remember the entrance to If You Had Wings and the Circle Vision Theater all that much, but I believe it was that wall that you now see that is all metal and has like those octagon windows,
right,
was all glass, so you could see people in the first waiting room for Mission to Mars. I believe Circle Vision had a similar entrance as well.
And you could see people in the queue for If You Had Wings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was certainly It was certainly a very different design, and it was certainly a 70s sort of design of what the 90s might look like, which turned out to be completely false. But I can remember pretty vividly the early 80s, and you had the little oval signs that hung out over the walkway for those attractions down that sort of main boulevard of Tomorrowland and everything. So,
which is very similar to the one you'll still see for Buzz, just more plain white pylon.
Right.
All right, so Anthony, what is your golden era or golden age of Tomorrowland?
Well, Tom, my golden age would have to be 1995.
Yes.
I think that that era was basically one of the best times in Tomorrowland. It had such a mix of some of the most iconic attractions that you think of when you think about Tomorrowland. I mean, it had Alien Encounter, it had Delta Dream Flight, the Skyway was still running, the Timekeeper had just started recently. It's just such a collection of cool and iconic attractions at that point. I mean, Alien Encounter, whether you think it was too scary for the Magic Kingdom or not, is still a cool attraction, and was, at that point, Alien Encounter was probably one of the more unique and edgy, and definitely brought new life to Tomorrowland at that point. At that point, where up until that time, you know, things were sort of getting stale with Mission to Mars, where it wasn't necessarily a new thing at that point. It had been running for several years, and was basically just a rehash of, thank you, Flight to the Moon. It was basically a rehash. It was more of the same, and I feel it was the beginning of a good evolution for Tomorrowland at that point.
Yeah, because remember, we had a very futuristic Epcot back then, and to have a Tomorrowland that's looking into the same future that Epcot was in, and was, you know, extremely more dated than a Future World at Epcot, you know, it just couldn't exist. They could not coexist on the same property.
Yeah, they kind of clashed, because you're going into Tomorrowland and it's looking really dated. You go to Future World and Epcot, and as you said, those things clashing is not a good thing. One should sort of complement the other in, you know, looking into the future, not clashing where one's sort of looking to the past, the other is looking to the future.
Yeah, so they turned the focus of Tomorrowland went towards story and, you know, a fictional future, while Epcot decided to remain true to that, looking into the not-too-distant future, which is, again, what both Tomorrowland at Disneyland, which I believe looked into 1985 when it opened.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was sort of that Epcot future world. And even when ours opened, in Tomorrowland for the Magic Kingdom, it was, again, a look into the future 20 or 30 years from then. Unfortunately, Epcot did a much better job with the influence of real-life companies. So, you know, you can't have two of the same concept running in the same resort. So it was a very smart idea in the Magic Kingdom, which was always a park other than Tomorrowland, focused deeply on story, that they move more towards that story end.
Oh, definitely. This is the era I think of when I think of Tomorrowland.
Of course, we're talking about a radical new theming, the rock work and the dark tones and the steel and the lights and the neon lights. And because before, the entrance to Tomorrowland was those two large, I don't even know what you would call them. They're sort of these horned mountains that had an indent in them, and the waterfall. There would be waterfalls in both of them.
Sort of like obelisks in a way.
Yeah. Which, again, was the theme for, you know, it was all white and light blue, and that was the original Tomorrowland. And it remained that color, and for the most part, the back end of Tomorrowland today is still that white and blue.
Yeah, it was the, you know, 1970s era kind of sort of sterile, clean future. And 95 era began the evolution to the more, for lack of a better phrase, the futuristic future, a, you know, sort of pulp comic kind of future over the squeaky clean future that you got in the 70s era of Tomorrowland.
And of course, we turn more off of man's achievement and turn more towards making fun of, you know, the big businesses of the future with, of course, Excess Tech and their failing transporter in Alien Encounter. And, of course, the Timekeeper's problematic time machine in the Timekeeper attraction.
Oh, absolutely. The Timekeeper, I feel terrible. I never really got to see this in person. But it and Alien Encounter, I think, really, really stood out as standing for the new Tomorrowland decree. The more technological science fiction view of looking into the future, which I think is probably one of the best ways of looking at Tomorrowland.
Well, at least it looked good on paper.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, a lot of people like the way it worked for Paris, because Paris opened not with Tomorrowland, but Discovery Land, which is the Jules Verne, you know, vision of the future. So we went for the same thing, and eventually Disneyland tried for the same thing as well. But as the story goes, both ran into very different problems over time. So, Scott, what is your golden age of Tomorrowland?
Well, Tom, I would have to go with 1999. That is my golden age.
You're ripping out Dream Flight on me.
Well, sorry, Tom. I have reasoning. Let me to build on what Anthony says. I love the way the direction that Tomorrowland went in. As you guys talked about, the more fanciful future, the more science fiction-y future. But I feel it reached its perfection in this era. I felt this is when it had the best assortment of attractions that I think it's ever had, and to this day, I stand by that. Like everyone said, I loved when Tomorrowland got its refurb. I loved the more fanciful Tomorrowland community. I thought it was incredibly well-themed, and at the time, probably the best-themed land, period. Because you had, you know, posters, advertising stuff that, you know, wasn't there. Kind of, you know, like the Opera House, I think there's one. You had little touches like the mail robot and the phone booth and
it was a city. The idea was that this is a city with Rocket Tower Plaza and all these different sites in the town.
It was very much a complete place. Whereas Fantasyland was kind of vague. Like, it was more just a grouping. Where Fantasyland is more like a grouping and Adventureland's kind of got a loose theming, like it's kind of like a base camp. This was a city. You very much felt like, oh, this is like a mini Epcot. Not to compare it to Epcot because it gets that a lot, but it almost felt like a mini theme park. It was not just like a place where certain types of rides go. It was its own place, its own unique location, and
it's
I love that.
It's the only land where everything ties together, other than Main Street, I think. And I think it's a successful model because Main Street is supposed to be its own little town, and so is Tomorrowland, and that's why it works.
Exactly, that's exactly right. And I think this is when, like I said, all the attractions were at their peak. You had going in from Main Street, you had Alien Encounter, which as much as I don't know if it was the right fit for Magic Kingdom, I mean, it was really intense. As much as you might want to argue that it didn't belong in Magic Kingdom, you cannot argue it was amazingly themed. And a wonderfully put together attraction.
You gotta love Tim Curry. Or if you're like me and were lucky enough to see the first version, you gotta love Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman eventually
got in the Tiki Room under new management.
Yeah, and like I'm astounded by how awesome Disney did with that attraction. It's got a complete story, complete theming, two really good shows, and it was very edgy, very pushing the envelope to sort of take on the excess of big corporations, you know, and to caution as a cautionary tale of the future, as opposed to an optimistic view of the future, while still being a cool pulpy science fiction, James Cameron alien type of thing. It was really cool. Again, a little too intense for the Magic Kingdom. Maybe that's not the point of the argument, but it was an amazing, amazing attraction.
Remember the time period we're in though. With these 90s. This is a time when Disney saw possible competition out of Universal. And remember, Universal is building a second theme park right now. We don't know that Universal's, you know, not going to be competition a few years down the road. But nonetheless, Disney is taking them as serious competition at the time. So there was that. There was a little more creative freedom. And there was, you know, when you... The Magic Kingdom needed something to compete. So, you know, the idea of a scary thrill type attraction for the Magic Kingdom was certainly on the table for once, and probably the only time it ever will be again.
And yeah, as my, and you, again, we can argue till we're blue in the face about whether it was a good idea, appropriate idea, or whatever. You can't argue it was an awesome attraction. So you had that, and then across from it, you had the Timekeeper, which I loved to death. I love that attraction so very much. It's the, I think, one of the ultimate Disney fan attractions. It's insanely quotable. It's insanely quotable. It was like kind of hearkening to what you said, Tom, that creative freedom. Like, it was just out and out funny. I think maybe the funniest attraction that Disney ever made.
And again, a tremendous amount of talent there with Robin Williams. Rhea Perlman.
And Jeremy Irons.
Unbelievable talent there again.
Yeah, it was beyond. It was really something special. And to interact, so to have, again, such an amazing story that was, again, something I have never, as a fan going into it at that time, I'd never heard of in a Circle Vision theater movie, you know? To have this kind of, you know, into, oh, we're going to go in and we're going to see a film about Canada, or we're going to go in and get a, see it's something about China. It was, this was something like, it had a pre-show, it had a story, and it was engaging.
And this was a first for Circle Vision, because, I don't remember the year it debuted at Disneyland. But you know, in 30 or 40 years, you know, that no one had played around with that technology ever. There was never an idea of having something, you know, moving, you know, off screen, or having a pre-show, or having a real story in a Circle Vision show. This was the first time it was done.
I thought the result was spectacular. The result was one of the most charming set of characters, perfect for Tomorrowland, because they were whimsical, yet they still embodied tomorrow while it was still based in today, and then you went into the fanciful tomorrow. I can't say enough good things about the Timekeeper. It was something little. It was not like a major e-ticket, but it's something that really holds in my heart very well. And then across from Timekeeper, sort of, you had Buzz. And, you know, you can make an argument about which fit into better into Tomorrowland, Delta Dreamflight or Buzz Lightyear.
I think
still,
Buzz is going to win that argument.
I think so, but you can argue, oh, it's a toy. It's not, you know, really future. It's not the real future. It's a weird argument, but I think, personally, Buzz fits in much better, and I think it's a much more engaging and a much more story-oriented immersive attraction than Delta Dreamflight. Not that Delta Dreamflight was bad, it was a great attraction, but I remember I really loved Delta Dreamflight as a kid, and when they said that they were going to close it down, this was when the little Disney nerd in me was growing, and I'm like, well, let's see what they put in. Let's see what they do. And, you know, because I was, you know, a little, I think that was trying to remember back. I think that's the oldest attraction I remember liking and then them removing. Mm-hmm. I think. And that might have been Toad. I don't know. So I was eager to see what they did, and they blew me away. I mean, it was
innovative.
Totally blew my expectations. It totally was something unique at the time before Universal opened Men in Black. It was never seen before.
How dare you bring up them?
Well, sorry. I'm just saying, you know, they got it from somewhere. Cough. It was something no one had ever seen before. It was engaging. It was fun. And it was immersive without... And they did it fairly... I don't want to say cheaply, but there was a lot of, you know, cardboard. Or not cardboard, but there was a lot of cutouts. And
well, I think there's a lot of money in Buzz in that, you know, that ride system probably wasn't cheap. The guns installation, and of course, you know, there's really, really nice Buzz audio animatronics in the attraction.
That
as
is
well.
True. I guess. Okay, let me retract some of that statement. What I meant was that it was all done fantastically on all levels. There was no hint of, like, there's nothing bad about it anywhere. You know, you couldn't really look for something bad if you tried, because
no.
It was just fun. you know, which gave them a base for Toy Story Mania later. So you had that open. It was brand new. Plus you had the Timekeeper still going, plus Alien Encounter still going, and plus you had the classics, TTA, Space Mountain, love them to death. I don't really care about the Speedway or the arcade, but they were there. So I think that, so the new Tomorrowland theming combined with two of my favorite attractions, Buzz and Timekeeper, with the old classics and the much better Alien Encounter versus, of course, Stitch, I think you have the pinnacle Tomorrowland right there.
All right, so I guess that leaves this whole decision down to me, unless I pick one of the off-errors. But I have to agree with Scott, 1999. And I know it's going to shock some because that's post-Delta Dreamflight, but you know what? If Delta Dreamflight could have been replaced with anything, I'm happy it was Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin, because as Scott said, innovative, innovative ride. Unbelievable. And before Toy Story Mania, that was the ride I was going on, you know, 10 times a trip. So...
As were we all, Tom. Yes. As were we all.
And Timekeeper is funny because when I was young, I really didn't enjoy it all that much. And then, you know, when it started getting around this time, 1999, 2000, I really started to like it. It's a shame because as soon as I really started to like it, it went seasonal. But the good thing was I always went Christmas and New Year's week every single year, and it was open. So on a packed New Year's Day or New Year's Eve day, during the day on New Year's Eve, you know, that was one attraction you could go on with no wait. So I would go see the Timekeeper like twice that day. And so it was always very cool because, you know, you don't get that opportunity the rest of the year to see it after it went seasonal. But a great attraction. Love that. And as Scott said, for something that wasn't there all that long, every single line of that thing is extremely quotable. And we catch ourselves doing it all the time.
Oh, I do it in like my normal life for like myself.
Hello, Trevor. Take care.
daiquiris for everybody. It's just like stuff like that will just come to me in the middle
Chardonnay
of my day.
Gone tomorrow. Anyway, moving on. I wasn't the biggest Alien Encounter fan, but anything's better than Stitch, so I'm gonna let that one go. Of course, love the TTA. Love how it ties into the Tomorrowland story with those scenes, and of course you've got the original Epcot City model, which is really cool. Looks into Buzz. Gotta love the TTA. Space Mountain, classic attraction. My favorite version of Carousel of Progress, the original song. I'm going to be so depressed when this particular version of Carousel of Progress is gone. Even though that finale Christmas scene is horribly outdated with laser discs, and I cringe every time because we bought one of those things. But regardless, it's still a great version. You got to love that. And, of course, the Speedway doesn't really matter, but you gotta love the Astro Orbiter and the entirely new theme for Tomorrowland. The structure work. The facades are phenomenal, and the rock work's great, and I love that as you're walking out from the hub into Tomorrowland, whatever that thing is supposed to be, it's so cool. The sign for Tomorrowland. It's just really nice, and, of course, new Tomorrowland was built for nighttime. This thing is insanely beautiful at night, this area, with the neon lights and the Astro Orbiter going around, and just wonderfully, wonderfully done. And, of course, the cohesive story that ties the whole thing together, phenomenal. So I'm going to go with 1999 only because Buzz fits a little better than Dreamflight did, and that's why I'm picking 99 over 95. So with that, I think we can officially determine that the golden age of the Magic Kingdom's Tomorrowland was indeed 1999.
Woo!
Woo! Yes.
I win.
So over time, this year will be mathematically combined with other years, and we will eventually average them out to figure out the golden age of the Walt Disney World Resort. And we'll see you next time on the Golden Age.
It's time to see what's going on around the WDWNT family of websites and make some town square talk. To fill you in on all of this week's announcements, please welcome Mayor Justin Heyman.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Town Square Talk, where we bring you all the news and information from around the WDWNT network of podcasts and websites. Joining me today, as always, the one, the only, Tom Corliss.
Thank you, Mayor.
Very welcome. So, we're going to start off this week with Tom reviewing what's up for voting on the WDW News Today Network Community Forums with DLNT and WDWNT Interactive.
Yes, so we've officially launched DLNT Interactive to match WDWNT Interactive, so our Disneyland News Today podcast listeners and WDW News Today podcast listeners can vote for the segments on both shows. And certainly our Disneyland News Today audience will not be upset that they get to vote for a excellent segment in the episode 76 of Disneyland News Today, where they're going to do a special Haunted Mansion 40th anniversary show. And they're going to do What Were They Thinking, a segment we used to have on WDW News Today. The topics up for voting for that show are: what were they thinking in regards to Haunted Mansion Holiday, the Haunted Mansion movie, the story of Master Gracie or the Bride, and finally, clean outside, dirty inside. And that, of course, talking about the exterior of the mansion as opposed to the interior out at Disneyland. So some interesting topics up for voting. Episode 76 is going to be a big show on Disneyland News Today, a Haunted Mansion 40th anniversary special. So that'll certainly be interesting. Over on WDWNT Interactive, we have a few different segments actually up for voting at the moment. Of course, they're still voting for Back to the Future on episode 108. Back to the Future returns after a few weeks off since that huge episode 100 edition. And currently up for voting for that Walt Disney World History segment, we have the Skyway at the Magic Kingdom. We have Horizons and Mission Space at Epcot. We have the Backlot Studio Tour at Disney's Hollywood Studios. We have the now-defunct Discovery River Boats at Disney's Animal Kingdom. And we have Chef Mickey's at the Disney Village Marketplace. And then Disney's Contemporary Resort. And right now, voting, Horizons is winning. But the Skyway has been forging a comeback. And Backlot Studio Tour isn't out of this thing yet either. So still plenty of time to voting. Voting on that one is going to close on August the 8th. We still have a little time to decide our coordinates. A
lot of interesting topics this week. And the poor Discovery River Boats, I think, always gets trumped by other topics. I know there's a lot of folks who actually want to hear about that. So,
yeah, it's been up a few times. It might be the biggest loser. It might have lost the most polls by now.
Probably.
But we'll see. Someday it will happen. We also have voting for the World's Finest for episode 105 coming up. The voting for that closes very soon on August 5th. And you could vote for we'll decide the World's Finest on either of these four topics: table service restaurant at Epcot, the use of the Living Character Initiative technology, so we'll try and decide what is the best use of that technology in an attraction or such. Best World's Finest Value Resort Hotel or World's Finest Fantasyland Attraction. So a lot of interesting ones there. Table service at Epcot winning right now, but that Living Character Initiative is certainly not far behind. And two topics I would love to do. So hopefully one of those two will end up winning. And the very last thing we have is our continuing quest to find the golden age of the Walt Disney World Resort in episode 107. Voting for this open for quite a while till August 19th. And the next locations you can vote for us to pick the golden age of: you have Frontierland at the Magic Kingdom, the Universe of Energy at Epcot, Echo Lake Area at Disney's Hollywood Studios, or Dinoland USA at Disney's Animal Kingdom. All really, really good. Right now, Frontierland and the Universe of Energy are neck and neck, but still a lot of time to go on that one. And that is everything going on in Interactive at the moment.
All right, great. So get out there and vote. I know I've been seeing a lot more of you guys who are podcast listeners coming over to the WDWNT Network community forums to vote on this stuff and talk about some of the great topics that are going on there. So we're happy to have you.
Every vote counts. It quite often we decide these polls by one or two votes. So
And quite often right before we go to record, too, so.
Absolutely. That's why we get caught off guard sometimes.
So go ahead and vote, and make sure you hear what you want to hear on these podcasts. So, Tom, we wanted to talk briefly about our newest website, WDWNTunes, today. A lot of changes have been coming out over on that site. Most recently, we have the newest additions to the lineup there, and coming out very shortly, you'll be able to see this on the site. We now have 3 days where we air one of each of our three podcasts. Tuesdays at 11 o'clock, you can hear the Disney Pincast.
All of these times are Eastern, of course.
Or Eastern time. Wednesdays, coming soon, will be the Disneyland News Today podcast, airing at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And on Thursdays, back at 11 a.m. Eastern time, of course, the WDW News Today podcast.
So if you ever have a week where you forgot to download the show by then and you're sitting there and want to listen to it, you can tune in at those times.
Yeah. Or if you're on a different computer, if you're away from home, your iPod broke, whatever it might be, we figured you'd
There's plenty of excuses out
plenty,
there.
Plenty of excuses. You just want to hear our voices again. You miss us so much.
Yep. As long as Luke Manning's not on those, yeah.
Yeah. Like that goes without saying. Each day at 3 p.m., you will hear all four Walt Disney World parades. And Ooh. Each night, what's that?
No, I was just happy.
including the Superior Block Party Bash. And yes. And each evening at 9 p.m., you can enjoy all the nighttime spectaculars from the Walt Disney World Resort, including Spectrum Magic. So,
and I know we're working on West Coast Wednesdays, which are eventually going to happen, where because we are Disneyland News Today on those days, we're also going to do a parade block at 3 o'clock Pacific time, and maybe even a nighttime block at 9 o'clock Pacific time. So working on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're just working out the bugs with that. But very soon, I've been even batting around, Tom, maybe an hour of Disneyland only for those West Coast folks. But we'll see how that pans out. So look to a lot of programming changes come into there. As always, you can email us at wdwnewstoday@gmail.com if you have any suggestions. And use the request box at WDWNTunes to let us know what you want to hear.
Absolutely.
Jose has also been working on that site a little bit with the chat box. So please be aware that there are some changes that are coming to the chat. And if there's any issues or feedback that you need to give us also, please email us.
We're working on it. We can call this WDWNTunes beta right now. We're working out the kinks, but it's getting there, and we've had a great response thus far. Of course, the first live show there went spectacular. So our next live show is August 23rd, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. So by then, I'm sure we'll have a new chat of some kind running, and looking forward to another great WDWNT live.
Absolutely, and thanks to everybody who joined us on that Wednesday evening. It was great to have everybody out.
Yes, our big anniversary show. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, sure was. All right, so last thing, Tom, why don't you remind everybody about our newest and perhaps most biggest exciting endeavor that we've had, WDWNT The Weekend.
Yes, it seems there's not enough adjectives left to describe this event. We're closing in on the one-year mark, and our current idea is to launch the full-fledged WDWNTTheWeekend.com sometime in August. If that doesn't happen, please don't hurt us. But we're working on that as well at the moment. But right now, if you go to WDWNTTheWeekend.com, you can sign up for our exciting newsletter, and the newsletter will make sure you are the very first to know any updates about the event as more details become available, as well, of course, any surveys, you can be the first to take them. Of course, we're sending out a lot of surveys because we want to make sure this is the event that you want. That is the most important thing to us, is this is a, just like our shows are fan-controlled, why shouldn't our first fan event be as well? There's absolutely no reason it shouldn't. So again, the dates are August 19th through the 22nd, 2010, at the Walt Disney World Resort. Our first ever major fan event weekend. There is going to be, right now we're planning on exclusive tours, dining, and many, many exclusive experiences along with the WDWNT crew and fellow like-minded Disney fans. It is sure to be a lot of fun. Again, stay tuned to WDWNTTheWeekend.com, sign up for the newsletter, and you'll be the first to know when the official site actually launches, and the first to know everything else about this exciting event.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm very excited because this will probably be my first chance to meet many of you guys who I've talked with on the forums and various other outlets that we are able to talk to our fans. So I'm very excited myself to be able to come down and meet you guys in person.
It's like a big family reunion next August. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Sure is. So with that, I think that's going to do it. Enough news from around the network today. Thanks for joining us on this edition of Town Square Talk. See you next time.
And before we go, Justin, I wanted to remind everybody about our two-year anniversary video that's finally up at WDWNTube.com. That's WDWNTUBE.com. It's in two parts, so go watch it. Great tribute to the second year of WDWNT.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, with that fine piece of information that I forgot, thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next time on Town Square Talk.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like that is going to do it for episode 104 of the WDW News Today podcast. As always, I'd like to thank you for listening. You make this show truly possible and worth doing each and every week. It's now time for the big finish, giving us all the useful reminders we'll need in the coming week. First of all, to contact us here at the show with any questions, suggestions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at wdwnewstoday@gmail.com. or leave us a voicemail message at 206-666-2982. If you're leaving a message for the WDWNT mail segment, please be sure to put that in the subject line of your email or mention it in your voicemail. If you have not done so already, please leave us a review on iTunes. It's a great way to let others know that there's an enjoyable Walt Disney World-based podcast out there for them. Be sure to visit the WDWNT Network community forums to vote for upcoming segments of this show and view the show notes for this and previous episodes. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/WDWNT and to make me a friend on Facebook at facebook.com/WDWNT. While over there on Facebook, be sure to join the WDWNT Network Facebook group. Great way to stay connected with the network and know everything that's going on here at WDWNT. WDWNT The Weekend is coming August 19th through the 22nd, 2010. The official site is launching very soon, but until then, you can go to WDWNTTheWeekend.com, sign up for the newsletter, and you'll be the first to know everything about our exciting fan event weekend coming next year. Coming up on next week's show, episode 105, we're going to have your Walt Disney World Weekend update, and we're going to have another spectacular edition of The World's Finest. All that and much, much more coming up next week. And since we just previewed next week's show, that means that this week's is over, and it's once again time for the corniest catchphrase in all of podcasting. And if you're sending in emails, it's always great that you all do the see you real soon at the end of them. It's a great nod to a horrible, horrible catchphrase that ends the show every week. But anyway, regardless, here it is. That's going to do it for this week. See you all next week. See ya real soon.
Thanks for taking part in another episode of the WDW News Today podcast and celebrating news today. Please join us again next week. And remember to celebrate news today and every day throughout the WDWNT network by visiting WDWNT.com. This is Brian Summer saying good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.